The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Reach me at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us in the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Before I start in on Clayton Kershaw. So, remember I told you a couple days ago how I was talking about Kevin Durant and how it's just long odds that you ever come back from an Achilles the same. It basically never happens. And then some members of the Seattle Storm tweeted at me, like, what about Breonna Stewart, their best player who just won MVP on a great team? They swept the finals, and Breonna Stewart played out of her mind, as she always does. And I corrected myself. I was like, yep, you're right. I should have considered, you know, the WNBA, too, when I'm thinking about basketball. We were talking NBA, and I was being hyperbolic at a certain point. I said, no athlete ever comes back from, you know, I understand there are examples. They are the exceptions that prove the rule. At any rate, Alicia Clark, Jewel Lloyd, the guard, who's excellent, and Alicia Clark, the forward, who's also excellent. I mean, they have Sue Bird. They have a great, great team. Tweeted at me, if you watch the WNBA, you'd know Breonna Stewart did it. And Alicia Clark said, and I said, well, I was talking NBA, but then Alicia Clark quoted me saying, no athlete ever has. Women are athletes, too. One athlete has. So I tweeted back. I tweeted back, yep, we'll correct on air. Congratulations on the chip, by the way, right? So Alicia Clark tweets at me, awesome, and thank you very much. And I'm thinking, she shouldn't have to thank a media member for being accurate, right? Like, why should she have to thank me for that? So I write, shouldn't have to thank the media for being accurate and for not ignoring important accomplishments. And to which she responded, actually, I was thanking you for the congratulatory wishes on winning, LOL. You can't win. This is like everyone loves tweeting and especially texting, the new generation texting. A lot of times, you know, a younger person, I'm 47, so there are lots of younger people now, will say something like, yeah, I spoke to so-and-so. What they mean is they texted with them, right? This is why I prefer a phone call, a quick phone call. You can't mistake tone and stuff like that. Anyway. It's good. Raj, I want Alicia Clark on the show. You know?
I did reach out to them, both of them, and I haven't heard back. So
I could just tweet at them, but I'd like to see you do your job as a producer. Why do I have to book the show?
Yeah, well, and I didn't want to.
Let me tell you a little story. Let me tell you a little story. I know you think you're a big star now with your ridiculous headshot that is on ESPN News right now.
That's fresh.
Let me tell you a story. I was doing a radio show once, and I had Tony Kornheiser on the Max Kellerman Show when I was doing it in New York. And I asked Tony, I said, Tony, I noticed I listened to your show, and, you know, he has a show in D.C. at the time. And I said, you know, you're good getting in and out. A lot of people are good getting in and out of breaks, doing the formatics, as they're called. Like Mike Greenberg is great at that. A lot of people who do radio are. And I'm always like choppy with that. What kind of advice can you give me? And Tony said, and this is why Kornheiser is the best, Max, Baryshnikov does not sweep up the stage at the end of a performance. You have producers to worry about that stuff. And what I should have told him then was, one day I'll be produced by Raj Grobe. So, no, I don't! Now, let me get to this Kershaw stuff, if you don't mind, Raj. Here's, first of all, Dave Roberts, the Dodgers manager, being asked about Kershaw's struggles in the postseason after losing yet another postseason game. Now in a 3-1 hole. That's a big swing, wouldn't you say? Tied up at 2-2 or down 3-1. And here's manager Dave Roberts, who was on this show. He is my enemy because he stole that base against the Yankees in 04. We are enemies. Like, we were talking nice on the show and everything, but I made it very clear. Dave Roberts, we are still enemies. He's a nice guy and a good manager. But this is what he said about Kershaw and his reputation as a postseason choker.
He came out and, you know, five innings, one run, and then, what happened right there in that sixth inning. But he gave us a chance to win the baseball game. You know, we couldn't put any runs up early and get a lead and or hold a lead, you know, after the Eddie home run. But that narrative couldn't be further from the truth.
Further from the truth? He gave you a chance to win the baseball game. No, he gave you a chance to win a football game. You see how many runs he gave up? If that's a football score, he gave you a chance to win the game. He gave you no. Let me tell you something. Four earned runs in five innings, yeah, it could be worse. But it wasn't what you needed that day. If it was a high-scoring game and the Dodgers were scoring a lot of runs and he was keeping you in it, that's one thing. That's not what happened. Look, let me just, here's some stats, okay? Forget about the fact that he only went five innings. Lots of guys only go five innings nowadays, right? Five and dive in the old days, disgrace. Nowadays, guys are averaging 100 miles an hour with the fastball. They're not going as deep into games. And lineups, once you've seen them twice, these hitters are so good now that they adjust, and it's tough to get through the lineup the third time. Here's playoff Kershaw, but let's hold on. Let's start with go-ahead hits allowed in the postseason, okay? So this is the sixth inning or later. I just said, hey, nowadays, guys, five and dive is okay. Since the 2013 postseason, he has given up the second, tied with Verlander, who's been good at times in the postseason, the second most go-ahead hits in the sixth inning or later. Second most. So I understand five and dive is okay. However, Kershaw's postseason ERA from the sixth inning on is 7.31. That's now here's the problem with it. Well, yeah, because maybe he pitches deeper into But that's the worst of any starter with at least 20 innings in that scenario, according to ESPN stats and information research from them. So in other words, we're comparing apples to apples. It's hard to pitch past the sixth inning nowadays, I get it, but he's the worst at it, the worst. And apples to apples, it's with a minimum of 20 innings pitched. So you can say, well, since he's been the ace and he's pitched so long now in big games, that he has a larger sample size. But we're only comparing him to at least guys with at least 20 innings pitched. 7.31 ERA after the sixth inning. Okay, that doesn't give you the whole picture. Here's what's more damning. Okay, maybe he's just not built like that, where he can pitch deep into games, especially if he's taking the ball three times in a series, which he doesn't often do anymore, but here's playoff Kershaw. Ready? 43.7% of his pitches in the strike zone. That's the lowest. Well, hold on. Let's go back. Never mind that stat. It's not as broad as the ones I'm about to give you. Here's Kershaw's career ERA. Okay? Regular season, it's 2.43. That is an all-time great. If you've pitched 10 seasons, something like that, and you have a 2.43 career ERA as a starter, you're one of the best who ever lived. Okay, well, what is it in the postseason? Well, let's start with the divisional series and the wild card round, right? Wild card round, division series. What is that ERA? So that's the next level after regular season where it's 2.43. It's 3.68. Mm-hmm. So now it matters more. His ERA balloons up, but it's still sub-4. It's still good, right? How about the LCS? Now it's deeper into the playoffs. Even more important, it's 4.84. Now you're a bad pitcher. Your ERA is 4.84. It's not good. These are large sample sizes, by the way, relatively, because Kershaw's pitched in a lot of postseason games. What is it in the World Series? Now these are the highest leverage games. It's 5.4. So 2.43 in the regular season for a pitcher who's pitched as long as Kershaw at this point is that means, if you're a starter, you're one of the best regular season pitchers who ever lived in the history of the universe. 3.68 in the division and wild card round, that means you're an effective starting pitcher, but not an ace. 4.84 in the AL in the league championship series, NLCS in Kershaw's case, you're not good. You really probably shouldn't be starting. 5-4 in the World Series, you're a disaster. I root for him every time. Come on, Kershaw. Turn it around. It just gets worse and worse. He's compiling it over a huge sample. One of the all-time cliff dives from regular season heights to postseason futility. By the way, he's in good company. Peyton Manning was once that way. Eventually, he had enough reps that he won some big games. But people are forgetting. You can't just blame their defense back then, the Colts, right? The Jets beat him like 41-0. Nothing. That means the offense wasn't doing anything. Peyton Manning was the quarterback. Peyton Manning throughout his career consistently got worse under pressure. But he played long enough that eventually he also started doing well under pressure. James Harden, it looks like he's starting to turn that around. Clayton Kershaw has not. I am hoping his career does not end before he's able to come through on a World Series stage. Because make no mistake, in the 60s, the Dodgers won World Series because they had Sandy Koufax, Drysdale too. But Koufax, the greatest starting pitcher ever in his prime, had a .95 ERA in the World Series over 40-plus innings. That's why they won World Series. 81, Valenzuela. Not only took the world by storm as a 20-year-old with his screwball left-handed pitcher, and he was an all-star, but under pressure, that dude's one of the all-time great postseason performers. Look up the numbers, not just by my memory. 88, Hershiser, one of the best pitchers in baseball, pitched his very best when it mattered most. That's why the Dodgers won in 88. Kirk Gibson, yeah, Oral Hershiser. But in the Clayton Kershaw era, they've not won any World Series because Kershaw can't pitch under pressure. I hope he changes that. I hope he turns that around. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And we have a special guest right now. Michael Thompson, are you there?
I am here, Max. I am going through my sparring, getting ready for a weigh-in for later today.
That's right. Michael Thompson, you would think, a two-time NBA champion, number one overall draft pick, averaged 20-12 in Portland, backed up Kareem on the Lakers, won two chips, three sons, all made it to the highest level of professional sports, two in the NBA and one Major League Baseball. Klay Thompson, the most famous of the sons, an all-star, a champion, and yet I don't have you on to talk basketball, Michael Thompson. I have you on to talk boxing.
First, let me correct you. I'm an eight-time champion now, Max, because the latest championship by the Lakers. What's wrong with you?
Oh, yes, a broadcaster. Do you get a ring? Do you get a ring for these championships, Michael?
Yes.
They give you a ring, huh?
I got three as a dad, so that counts too. What's wrong with you?
You're a regular Chick Hearn and three as a dad.
Hey, I'm catching up to Bill Russell.
That's right. You're a Chick Hearn and Ken Griffey Sr. You're all rolled up into one.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're a regular Bobby Bonds. Listen, by the way, and Bobby Bonds and Ken Griffey Sr. were fantastic players, as was Michael Thompson. Michael, Lomachenko versus Teofimo Lopez. This is the kind of fight that makes people boxing fans. And luckily, it's on regular ESPN. You don't have to subscribe to anything or buy the fight and spend $100. You just got to turn on ESPN tomorrow night. Why are you interested in Lomachenko Lopez?
Because I love Teofimo Lopez. I think he's the rising star to be in boxing. I know we still got Tyson Fury and we still have Canelo Alvarez out there, but this guy is a lot like Tyson Fury. That's why I like Teofimo Lopez. He'll fight anybody. He'll fight Tyson Fury if you set up the fight. This is how he is. He doesn't duck anyone. And he has the charisma. He has the fighting style. He fights like a young Roberto Duran. He talks trash like he's Muhammad Ali. He's the perfect package for boxing.
You know, also, if you spend any time with him, like Tyson Fury, and if you speak to him personally at all, is such an easy guy to root for. He's a very, very likable person in life, insofar as I've had interaction with him. Teofimo Lopez also is such a good kid. You know, like, he's a vicious fighter in the ring, and he believes in himself. But if I've spent some time with Teofimo Lopez, the easiest kid in the world to root for, Michael Thompson. In the ring, though, he's got those fast twitchies and that real punching power, and Lomachenko has praised Teofimo's boxing IQ. Do you think it will be enough to overcome Vasily Lomachenko, considered by many the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world?
Yes, because boxing fans, and Max, you got to realize, Lomachenko's a 126-pounder moving up to 135. He's a smaller man. He's got short arms. He's older. So he's never faced anyone with the power and the strength and the skill of Lopez. That's why I think Lopez's size, his power, his youth, is going to overcome the small guy. Because you know the thing, the theory in boxing is a good big guy beats a good little guy every time, and that's what's going to happen in this fight.
The thing is about Lomachenko, when he struggled at lightweight by his standards, I mean, he had 400 amateur fights. He only lost one. He avenged that loss with two wins. He won two Olympic gold medals. As a pro, he's rampaged through divisions. He struggled by his standards at lightweight against Luke Campbell, an Olympic gold medalist, and Jorge Linares, a very talented fighter, but too prone to cuts. But at any rate, in both cases, not only was he fighting at lightweight, which I agree with you, Michael Thompson, he's not really a natural lightweight, and he agrees with that too, by the way, Lomachenko does. But he was fighting rangy fighters, where he had to work to get inside. And that's not Teofimo. He's not a long, rangy guy like Luke Campbell or Jorge Linares. Though more talented than those guys, he's more of a compact fighter. How does he use his size against Lomachenko?
Speed and quickness. He kind of reminds you of Mike Tyson, that in fighting. Mm-hmm. His hands are so fast and powerful. That speed is what he gets you. And Lomachenko's never faced anybody with the inside power skills of Lopez. And with that size, I don't see how a smaller man like Lomachenko, who's, don't get me wrong, I know he's great, but and he has good defense, but how is he going to deal with that strength and that power on the inside that he's going to have to fight with, because he can't beat Lopez from the outside? His arms are too short. He's got to get into that range, and when it comes to in fighting, I think Lopez has the edge.
You realize that Lomachenko is about a 3-4-1 favorite in this fight. And while I agree, he does have, look, Lomachenko has an excellent defense considering how dynamic an offensive fighter he is. But he's not like a Rigondeaux, another 2-time Olympic gold medalist who Lomachenko beat so bad that Rigondeaux quit, although Rigondeaux was the smaller man moving up and the much older fighter. But he's not like one of these safety first fighters, Lomachenko. So he is hittable, because he is looking to unload his own shots. And Lopez does have fight-ending and fight-changing power. Still, generally, when a 3-4-1 favorite, who's very experienced on a world-class level and has one of the best amateur backgrounds ever, fights a kind of hyped-up young puncher, usually that champion who with the experience wins. And the young guy either goes to school on the experience and comes out better, or he can get wrecked by it. You know, Davey Moore got wrecked by Roberto Duran. Ray Mancini got better by fighting Alexis Arguello. What kind of fight do you see this as?
Oh, this is going to be a phone booth fight. This is going to be a brawl, because that's the kind of fight Lopez wants to make it. And like you said, Lomachenko's a brave guy. He's not going to back off from it. All of a sudden, Lopez ain't going to turn into Sweet Pea Pernell Whitaker or Floyd Mayweather and try to just avoid the punches and not engage in a street brawl. I think Lopez is going to bring the fight to him, going to force Lomachenko to exchange on the inside, and Lopez has that overwhelming power and that speed and youth and quickness. I think that's going to be the deciding factor, and I think Lomachenko is such a huge favorite because the experts like you are underestimating how good Lopez is, because he's only had 15 or 16 fights, so you're not believing what your eyes have been telling you.
No, I do believe in Teo. And by the way, as I said, if you've met Teo and spent any time with him, Teofimo Lopez, you have to root for him. I know he may have turned some fans off who, you know, by the antics, he does the backflips and he makes gestures at fallen opponents and he talks cocky. But if you talk to him at all, or just listen to some of his interviews, he's an incredibly likable guy, like a thoughtful guy. I don't mean to underestimate his skills or his power. I just have that much respect for Lomachenko. Michael, in terms of anticipated fights, this is the most anticipated fight for you since?
Boy, I guess since Wilder Fury 2, because we were all looking forward to seeing how Wilder was going to adjust. So since Wilder Fury 2, this is the most anticipated fight, and probably the most anticipated fight of the year, until or unless, it looks like we're not going to get Spence and Crawford, but this could be the best fight of 2020, because the other champions are afraid to fight. This lightweight division is loaded with talent, but these guys want to step up and fight each other the way Lopez and Lomachenko are doing.
I totally agree.
This lightweight division is the best division in boxing.
I agree, and when you look at the most anticipated fights in recent years, like Triple G and Canelo was the fight we all wanted to see, and it delivered, and the rematch delivered. Then the next one was Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, and the first fight delivered. The second fight was one-sided, although it was very interesting. And now we would love to see Crawford and Spence, but that's not in the offing. But this fight, Lomachenko-Lopez, is is like one of those, like, oh my God, I can't wait for that fight. And it is tomorrow night on ESPN. Is Michael still there? Michael likes Teofimo Lopez to win. A lot of boxing. Michael Thompson's really a boxing guy. A lot of boxing guys like Teofimo Lopez to win. A lot of them do. And that would be a tremendous result for boxing. And I wish Lopez the best, but he has his work cut out for him because Lomachenko is not just like a normal, excellent fighter. He's different and special. And that's why he's a 3-4-1 betting favorite.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Max Kellerman Show, presented by Progressive Insurance. Reach me at 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. So Ty Lue is taking the Clippers job, no surprise there. He was kind of in line for it, groomed for it, should have had the Lakers job. But as Stephen A. said on First Take today, you can't fault Frank Vogel, who, you know, I thought that was a disaster waiting to happen. And in fact, at the time, criticized Jeannie Buss. I thought, Jeannie, this ain't so hard. This is an inside clutch sports job. What are you doing? Don't look. What are you fighting? You know, like they're going to send you everybody, including Ty Lue, which is the coach everyone wants. Why set it up with Vogel as the coach with Jason Kidd waiting in the wings, right? The whole idea is when Vogel fails, Kidd will take over. And Kidd does not have a great track record as a head coach, by the way. Kind of stubborn about defensive philosophies, and when people get doctrinaire about stuff, meaning they believe in a certain way of doing things, and rather than looking at details and thinking maybe I need to apply this differently or whatever, they just kind of stick to what they believe in. At any rate, I thought that was a disaster waiting to happen. Jason Kidd's going to be stabbing Vogel in the back, and Vogel's not good enough to get it done, and I was wrong. Rob Pelinka especially was right, as was Jeannie Buss, but Pelinka I went at, and Pelinka did a great job. Great job. And so did Jeannie Buss. And so you can't fault what the Lakers did, but it leaves the Clippers' job, left it vacant after Doc Rivers left and was let go, and Ty Lue is the obvious. Like, Ty Lue, I would say, is considered the number one coaching candidate in the NBA who didn't have a head coaching job. He's a championship coach, after all. And seems like the right fit with the Clippers, is a take-charge kind of guy. And more than anything, though, what the Clippers need is a point guard who can orchestrate, who can organize the offense. The offense is kind of lacks imagination. And Patrick Beverley's a good player. He can defend and hit a three. But he's not like a dynamic playmaker and kind of offense organizer off the dribble or anything like that, off the bounce. You need somewhat like Rondo would be great on that team, and that's why they're interested in him. But if I'm Rondo, I'm staying put. Ty Lue's going to have to find a point guard. By the way, Kawhi won two championships, one with Tony Parker, one with Kyle Lowry. I think that more than anything. Because Paul George, if you're waiting for him to be a great playoff player, you're going to be waiting a long time. It's just not who he is. All right. Keo in Virginia. You're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Well, what is it? My question to you is, do you think that Le'Veon Bell will work in a kind of Andy Reid-style offense, or will it just not work out for
no
the Chiefs?
Doubt. He's like, if Le'Veon Bell still has anything left, that's a great addition. I like the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl anyway. But the thing about Le'Veon Bell is you can split him out wide a couple years ago if you needed to. You can play him at any slot, and obviously he can catch passes and run the ball out of the backfield. He's not just, oh, we added a running back. He is a dynamic, all-purpose offensive weapon with a super high IQ. Very patient runner, great at diagnosing the defense on the fly. But you know how it is in the NFL. You can be a name brand guy, and if you ain't got those fast twitchies anymore, it don't matter. Hard to tell, though, with Adam Gase as his coach. No, I think on paper it works. That should work out great. That's news for Max Kellerman Nation. Keo just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line about, of course, Le'Veon Bell, who signed with the Chiefs. That should be a good signing. On paper it is. Gary in California, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm going to ask a question. I want to know, how long does Jermall Charlo have to wait to get his shot at Canelo Alvarez?
I like that good afternoon. We have a boxing question on a sports show. It's like, good afternoon. Very formal. Well, good afternoon to you. Top of the morning to you, sir. Charlo to get his shot at Canelo? Either Charlo. I'd love to see either Charlo in with Canelo. But the problem right now is DAZN gave, which is a streaming service, gave Canelo this enormous $300 million contract, minimum guarantee of $35 million per fight. And they're like, you have to fight premium opponents. So Golden Boy said, how about Billy Joe Saunders or Callum Smith? And DAZN balked. No, it's not a premium opponent. Well, why not? Well, because they won't drive more subscriptions to the service than some other opponent might, even if they're high quality. And my answer to that would be like, well, we'll have Canelo fight a kangaroo. That'll drive subscriptions. What is that about? We're talking about high quality opponent means a guy who's considered a top fighter. So the issue is, why would Golden Boy, who's getting a minimum guarantee of $35 million from DAZN, or if they have like $40 million to spend and they give $35 to Canelo, that leaves $5 million bucks to the opponent. A Charlo brother, as good as they are, sitting there going, well, you think I'm fighting Canelo for $5 million? When this dude's getting $35? Get all the way out of here. They're stars. They want to get paid too. DAZN, DAZN could make the argument, hey, Golden Boy, promote. You're promoters, right? Are you TV middlemen or are you promoters? Do you simply take the guaranteed money from the video distributor? Or do you actually promote and generate money and sell tickets and stuff and advertising and stuff? I could see that point of view. But really what's going on, it seems like DAZN has buyer's remorse with Canelo. And the pandemic is hitting everyone hard and they're probably in tight financial shape compared to the way they were. They also have spent on boxing like over a quarter of a billion a year, which is multiples of what HBO, which dominated boxing for like $80 million a year back in the day, multiples of what HBO ever spent. And they're probably thinking we'd like better ROI, return on investment here. So they're trying to put the screws to Golden Boy. At any rate, it all adds up to it not making great business sense at the moment for Canelo to fight one of the Charlo brothers. But here's the thing. If two fighters want to fight, they'll figure it out. That's why I'm not trying to hear from Errol Spence. Yeah, he can make money fighting guys in the PBC. You want this Crawford fight or not? Brother, you want this fight or not? Because everyone in boxing wants to see it. I'm not trying to hear, oh, well, promotional this and promotional that. When two fighters in the same weight division want to fight, and there's tens of millions to go around, you figure it out. It's news from Max Kellerman Nation. Gary just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. Love to see Canelo Charlo, either Charlo, Jermell or Jermall. Although I suppose right now, given that Jermall's a little naturally bigger, it would be Jermall. They both had very impressive wins on that pay-per-view card that they co-featured.
You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because yeah. I know on First Take, I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's last take.
Let me tell you something.
You have to pronounce clearly.
Here's the.
So we didn't know if you paused or not. You got to work on your pronunciation.
My pronunciation. The ironing is delicious, as in the words of Bart Simpson. Here's my last take, then I'm going to take some calls. When I was a kid, you could turn on any of the three networks, the major broadcast networks. This predates Fox as a broadcast network. CBS, NBC, ABC. And at 4 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday, when you're flipping around, at least two of those places would have live boxing. And it was Major League Boxing. The winners of those kind of fights would go on to fight on HBO. That was like the postseason of boxing. And the winners of the fights on HBO would have, back then, closed circuit, which predates pay-per-view. You have to go to a movie theater to see it. And that was like the World Series or the Super Bowl of boxing. Then it dried up on networks. Networks stopped airing boxing. And you had to go to like ESPN or USA Network to see boxing. And it wasn't usually Major League Boxing. It was AA, AAA boxing. So the whole Major League season was basically played out on HBO, which had limited dates. So there just wasn't a lot of great boxing. And what was on was on HBO. And then you get pay-per-views for like the big events. And when HBO got out of the boxing business, three places started vying for all the top fighters. So they aligned themselves with certain promoters. ESPN gave Top Rank $90 million a year to deliver Lomachenko and Terrence Crawford and their stable of fighters on ESPN exclusively. And DAZN signed up Matchroom Boxing and Golden Boy and spent over $250 million a year. And Fox and Showtime each went in for about $50 million to PBC. Al Heyman's stable of fighters. And so, but PBC, usually their best fights are on Showtime, and their very best fights are on pay-per-view, not on Fox. And DAZN is a streaming service. You got to subscribe. And ESPN Plus is a great deal. I would say, like, as you hear me talking about other networks and other promoters, I'll be honest, PBC has the best fights because they have the most fighters, and they're all really good, and they're evenly matched oftentimes. DAZN has the biggest stars in Anthony Joshua and Canelo Alvarez. And ESPN, we have the best fighters. The two top pound-for-pound fighters in the world, most people would tell you, is Lomachenko and Terrence Crawford in whichever order. And by the way, Tyson Fury is the best heavyweight fighter in the world. But without a ton of fighters, it's hard to find great matchups, even matchups, right? Teddy Atlas is on TV today saying the A side versus the B side, you know who's going to win. A side is going to win. Where are the fights where you don't know who's going to win and they're top fighters and you don't have to pay extra money for it? Here it is. Lomachenko versus Lopez for the lightweight championship of the world. The kind of fight, which 5 years ago wouldn't even be on HBO, let's say. It would be on pay-per-view. And today you'd have to either subscribe to a streaming service or pay pay-per-view $70, $80, $100. Is on if you have ESPN, you're not paying anything extra to watch this fight. Just turn on a TV. ESPN's everywhere. Turn on ESPN tomorrow night, and you're going to see a pay-per-view quality boxing match, and it should deliver. It's not going to be two safety-first fighters trying to avoid punishment. It's going to be two supremely talented, skillful fighters who look to punish the opponent in a grudge match, both trained by their fathers, real animosity between the two camps for all the marbles, really, at lightweight. Don't miss this. I'm not giving you the hard sell. It's on ESPN tomorrow night. Adam in New York, real quick, you're on the Dr. Pepper call-in line.
This great fight on free TV is going to be the fight that shows us if Lomachenko belongs with the all-time great fights, Sweet Pea and Floyd Mayweather and Salvador Sanchez. I'm going to pick Lomachenko in a thriller by either decision or maybe like a very late round knockout, but it'll be better for boxing if Lopez wins.
Yeah, Lopez is, as I keep saying, not only is he controversial and all this, and he's a big puncher and everything, he's a great kid. Like he's an easy guy to root for and would be really good for boxing. But he has to beat Lomachenko, which is virtually impossible. Like, he can do it because he hits that hard and he's the naturally bigger fighter. It is a great matchup. I can't wait for tomorrow night. Don't miss the fight tomorrow night on ESPN, Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.